You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A few weeks ago, the Ohio-based banana company Chiquita Brands admitted to having paid $1.7 million to Colombian death squads who have killed thousands, including union organizers. In Colombia, even those trade unionists and organizers who are not murdered are often threatened, attacked, or kidnapped. Today on Underreported, we will find out what's behind the anti-union violence and how it might affect U.S.-Colombian free trade agreements. Maria McFarland is a researcher with the Human Rights Watch, and Adam Isaacson is Director of Programs for the Center for International Policy's Columbia Program. Very pleased to welcome them both to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
So first, let's deal with this Chiquita banana case. What exactly were the Chiquita executives paying, and who were they paying?
Well, the Chiquita executives were paying a group of paramilitaries known as the AUC. And the paramilitaries are essentially right-wing death squads that are responsible for widespread massacres, killings, and disappearances in Colombia over the last two decades. And these groups have historically been backed by landowners and businessmen who use them to protect their interests against guerrillas. And they've also enjoyed the toleration and support of military units who traditionally treated the paramilitaries as a force that was compatible to their own, to the extent that paramilitaries were even known as the 6th Division of the Colombian Army.
Weren't they also linked in the past anyway to the Medellin drug cartel?
That's right. The paramilitaries, the AUC, got their start as descendants of Death to Kidnappers, which was a group formed by Pablo Escobar, the head of the Medellin cartel, to defend his drug trafficking interests from kidnappers. And to this day, paramilitary groups are deeply involved in drug trafficking. In fact, they're probably among the biggest drug kingpins in Colombia, and the extradition of several of their leaders has been requested by the U.S.
Can we use these terms interchangeably? Death squads, paramilitary groups, guerrilla groups?
Not interchangeably. Guerrillas typically refer to the left-wing guerrilla groups in Colombia, the FARC and the ELN, although they also commit widespread atrocities, like the paramilitaries. And the paramilitaries are usually associated with the right-wing.
Adam, what did the money go towards?
Well, Chiquita apparently made somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 payments over a course of 7 years, totaling about $1.7 million. At least that's what the U.S. indictment said. And the payments were made largely as protection money. There was sort of a tacit threat from the paramilitaries to attack Chiquita's installations and workers if they did not pay. Apparently, they had made similar payments to the guerrillas before then. The payments to the paramilitaries began in 1997, which was around the time that the paramilitaries, really with a campaign of daily massacres, took that banana-growing region from the guerrillas.
Were the executives charged based in Ohio, where the company's headquarters are located, or were they in Colombia?
The executives who have had to pay a $25 million fine to the Justice Department are the Ohio-based executives. I believe there's 8 of them in the indictment. Although the company that made the payments was Chiquita's Colombian subsidiary, which has since been sold off.
Is it safe to say that anyone who bought a Chiquita banana during certain years was indirectly and unwittingly funding Colombian death squads?
Probably a tiny fraction of a cent of what you paid for that banana had to go toward their security payments to the paramilitaries, and before that to the guerrillas. That's definitely true. Similar allegations have been made about other U.S. and foreign companies in Colombia, making much more willing payments, using paramilitaries to actually break up labor organizing. So it could be, in some cases, said that some of what you pay at the pump, some of what you pay for coal, and even some beverage companies like Coca-Cola have been accused of making the same sort of payments.
So it's not just Chiquita Brands that has a recognizable name in this regard.
No, it's not just Chiquita Brands, and in fact, what Chiquita is accused of is still serious, but it's more innocuous than actually paying paramilitaries to go after people.
So let's get back to you, Maria. Have they mostly the death squads mostly gone after union trade unionists and union organizers? Is that what Chiquita really was concerned about, or were they just concerned about protecting themselves and not having their business disrupted?
Well, it's hard to say what Chiquita was actually concerned about, but the fact is that paramilitaries have a record of going after anybody who they presented as being a guerrilla sympathizer, and usually that means anybody who opposes them or anybody who is an obstacle to their control of a region. So paramilitaries have gone after trade unionists, they've gone after human rights defenders, indigenous people who didn't want them on their lands, academics, journalists, prosecutors, politicians. It's a very long list of civilians who have been targeted by these groups. And they had a well-known record of doing that at the time.
Ingrid Betancourt, who was a candidate for the Colombian presidency, was on the show some years back, and then 6 months later, she was kidnapped by one of these groups. And I haven't heard much about it since. Any idea of what happened to her?
Well, she was kidnapped by the FARC guerrillas, who are currently still holding her, as well as 57 hostages.
That's the leftist guerrillas.
Yes, that's the leftist guerrillas who the government is actively apparently fighting. The paramilitaries traditionally presented themselves as fighting the guerrillas.
So you're caught either way. You might be captured by left or right in Colombia. I would assume that anybody who speaks out lives in fear of being kidnapped, disappearing, or just being murdered.
That's exactly right. Organizing unions in Colombia, or being a human rights defender, or being a journalist, and speaking out against the abuses by these groups is a very, very dangerous activity.
So, Adam, what are conditions like for Colombia's workers who are trying to organize?
Colombia is usually called the most dangerous country in the world to organize a union. Right now, the number of unionists killed every year is about 60 or 70, and those are killings that are regarded as related to their union organizing activity. That's a little bit down from a few years ago, mainly because there's been an overall decrease in killings and because the Colombian government has been trying to negotiate the disarmament of paramilitaries, which has put most of the groups on better behavior. But there's really very, very few cases. You can probably count them on one or two hands of these murders ever being solved or investigated, tried, or punished. The impunity rate is almost 100%. So everybody knows that, you know, if you try to organize your factory, somebody can always just take you out and never be punished for it.
Is the problem worse in certain regions and certain industries?
It's certainly worse in the northern part of the country, where the paramilitaries are stronger. Attacks on unionists by guerrillas have happened, but they're much rarer. And that is the north of the country. It's the more industrialized parts of the country, and it's areas where there are a lot of extractive industries, oil, coal, and even large plantations like bananas or oil palms, that require large land holdings and require a lot of labor.
So is it less likely that you'll find paramilitary groups in the big cities like Bogota?
That's right. And you won't find guerrillas really in the cities either. Colombia has four cities that have a million or more population, and you won't really see any evidence of the armed groups unless you go way off into the margins of these cities where the recent arrivals from the countryside are forced to live in real squalor. And there is more of a presence of those groups. The cities, though, are sort of these bubbles. They're islands of stability where you can really live your life without knowing you're in a country at war.
We're talking about the situation in Colombia on today's Underreported with Adam Isaacson, Director of Programs for the Center of International Policy's Colombia Program, and Maria McFarland, a researcher with Human Rights Watch. And Maria, Adam talked earlier about negotiations between the government and these groups. On the other hand, he also said that very few people are ever caught for the crimes they commit. Haven't members of the Colombian government been accused of having ties to these groups?
Yes, that's right. For a long time, we knew about ties between paramilitaries and the military. However, now we're increasingly seeing revelations of links between paramilitaries and very high-level government officials. The foreign minister was forced to resign a few weeks ago because her brother, who's a congressman, was arrested for links to paramilitaries. Her father is now a fugitive, and because he's under investigation for apparently being connected to a kidnapping by paramilitary groups. And in addition to those cases, there are about 9 congressmen who are currently under arrest, another dozen or so who are being investigated. Most of those congressmen are from President Uribe's coalition in Congress. And President Uribe's former intelligence chief from 2002 to 2005 is under investigation for apparently having provided paramilitaries the names of trade unionists who were later killed.
So that would suggest that President Alvaro Uribe is going after these paramilitaries and the people who have been working with them and making it easier for them to do what they do. Or is this semi-cosmetic?
Well, you know, that's the government spin. The government has come out and, after all these revelations were made public, has claimed that this is all thanks to this demobilization program for the paramilitaries that the government was implementing, and that there's been some kind of flood of information resulting from the demobilizations. But that's simply not true. It's flatly wrong. The fact is that the investigations are being conducted by some fairly weak yet very brave state institutions, the Colombian Supreme Court and the Attorney General's Office, who are showing independence, and on the basis of evidence that came up completely independently from the demobilization process, have moved forward on these cases. And the government has only after the fact started to claim the credit for that. At the time that the allegations were first made about the intelligence chief, for example, President Uribe came out and accused the media, which had made the allegations public, accused the media of being undemocratic and malicious. So instead of calling for an investigation, he came out to the defense of his intelligence chief.
Now, Adam, what's in it for the Colombian military and those government officials who support these paramilitary groups? What are these groups doing for them?
Well, let's put it this way. Over the last 10 or 15 years or so, the paramilitaries have been responsible for about 75% of killings and disappearances in Colombia. The guerrillas, another 20 or so percent. That has allowed the military to go around saying that they are only responsible for 5% or less of the attacks on civilians that have taken place in what has really been sort of a dirty war. Meanwhile, the paramilitaries have taken key territories away from guerrillas, particularly all over northern Colombia. There's a whole band of sort of from the Panama border to the Venezuela border that is under paramilitary control. The guerrillas have been weakened, and there have, you know, strategic blows have been struck, but the military did not have to do the dirty work in order to do it. Paramilitaries also they share intelligence with the military. They work hand in hand in some parts of the country when it comes to, you know, trying to retake territory from guerrillas. This has happened a little bit less lately than it used to, but it's still a widespread problem that is almost never punished in the military. So they're sort of, you know, they offer a degree of deniability for some of the worst, you know, abuses. I mean, massacring civilians is brutal, but it also clears an area of civilians.
What about for the politicians? Is this a matter of political ideology, or is it a way of getting rid of your opponents? Or in certain cases, I'm assuming, because this is also a matter of political class, making things easier for yourself, your family business, and for the sorts of things that you might very well want to see change in the society without dirtying your own hands.
That's right. For the politicians, it was probably one of three things. Some of them were absolutely enthusiastic backers of the paramilitaries, and they met with them, and they helped hire, you know, they helped put them together, and they helped them even plan operations. And a second possibility is that, you know, they were happy to have the paramilitaries around, because they kept away the guerrillas who were kidnapping and extorting them, but they didn't, you know, they didn't meet with them frequently and enjoy having them around. They held them at arm's length and perhaps paid them and met with them when they had to. The third possibility, and this is what they'll be telling the judges, is that, you know, these were paramilitary-dominated areas. There was very little government presence there. So if I wanted to campaign in my home state, if I wanted to be able to run for mayor, I had to meet with the paramilitary leaders regularly and at least do their bidding occasionally, but I never asked them to kidnap or kill anybody. And that, of course, is what they'll be trying to argue. It's complicated, but it's certainly a marriage of convenience was going on in a vast swath of the country and may still be.
Maria, Colombia's President Uribe is one of our president's strongest allies in Latin America. Didn't President Bush make a stop in Colombia in his recent visit to Latin America, something that has been quite rare? I think the previous presidents were Ronald Reagan in 82 and Kennedy in 61.
That's right. The visits have been very rare, and this has been the first visit, I believe, to Bogota in decades.
Why haven't they visited more? Has it been dangerous, or did they want to keep an arm's length from a country that has so much corruption?
I think it's a little bit of both. The security situation has been very bad. I think now in Bogota there was a sense that, you know, it was possible to have this visit and provide Bush with adequate security. But in addition to that, President Bush, the Bush administration, views Uribe as its main ally, perhaps its only ally in the region. And so unlike past administrations that maybe had broader interests in Latin America, with this administration we have this policy of almost unconditional support for the Uribe government.
Without any comments on the scandal over the military's connection to the paramilitary death squads?
Well, I think now that we have a Democratic Congress, which is asking some questions, the Bush administration is being a little bit more cautious, and it was very difficult to ignore these huge scandals in Colombia during his visit. So when President Bush made statements there very recently, he did talk about the importance of having independent judicial investigations of these cases, which is a welcome statement, because in Colombia the tendency is to always have impunity, to always find a way to get these people off the hook, to forgive their crimes, or to give them reduced sentences. So calling for independent justice, I think, is very important at this moment.
Now, Adam, Colombia's neighbor, Venezuela, has huge oil reserves. What about Colombia? Does it have oil, or are bananas and drugs the major industries of Colombia?
Bananas and drugs. Oil is one of Colombia's exports. Right now, I believe it's actually surpassed coffee and everything else as their number one legal source.
I forgot coffee.
Legal source of foreign exchange. It's still a fraction of what Venezuela produces, although U.S. and other foreign oil companies are all over Colombia getting contracts for new exploration, because Colombia is believed to have the largest sort of unexplored oil reserves in the region. And we have no idea whether that's going to be decent quality oil or anything else, but there's wildcatters everywhere, including some of the more dangerous parts of the country right now.
And coffee still remains a strong industry. Bananas. What about drugs? There has been a lot of U.S. money put into helping Colombia combat the drug trade. Has it been effective?
No, the drug war in Colombia has probably been the number one most clear disappointment of all of the efforts that have been carried out there. The price of cocaine on U.S. streets, last time the United States government issued an official measure, was about $50 a gram lower than it was in 2000 when Plan Colombia began, which means that the stuff is actually more abundant than it was before, law of supply and demand. And the United States government's own measurements have actually found more coca in Colombia, the plant used to grow cocaine, than there was in 2000 when Plan Colombia began. This is despite the spraying with herbicides over about 2 million acres of Colombia territory since 2000 and several billion dollars in military and police assistance trying to eradicate the crop. What's basically happened is that our efforts to try to get rid of the crop have far outpaced any effort to try to help Colombia govern the territories where the stuff is grown and to try to find legal things for people to do.
Now, Maria, Hugo Chavez is very popular throughout Latin America. How does President Uribe How popular is he among Colombians?
Well, apparently, at least according to the polls that we've seen in Colombia, he is fairly popular. There have been questions raised about those polls, but the fact is that President Uribe has presented himself as a tough leader who is standing up to the guerrillas. And the previous administration had led some negotiations with the FARC guerrillas that were spectacularly unsuccessful and left the guerrillas in control of a piece of territory the size of Switzerland. So when Uribe came in and announced this tough policy on the guerrillas and started fighting them, I think that helped to make him quite popular, even though his policy towards paramilitary groups has been the opposite. It's been concession after concession.
So where do we stand now? The new Democratic Congress is likely to question some of the things that are going on, and in the way we are trading with Colombia, are we likely to see much change?
I think we will see some change. I think the Democratic Congress is with very good reason, asking some serious questions about the balance of U.S. aid to Colombia. As you know, most of our assistance to Colombia has been military in nature. It's been about 80% of the total U.S. package. And I think Democrats might be interested in supporting other parts of Colombia's government more. For example, the judicial sector, which is, as I said before, showing some signs of moving in the right direction and being worth supporting. In addition to that, I think the Democratic Congress is going to have to look very closely at Colombia's human rights record before doing anything on a free trade agreement with Colombia. At Human Rights Watch, we have been urging the Congress to treat Colombia as a special case when it comes to the free trade agreement because of its horrific record on violence against trade unionists and because of the failure of the government to do anything about the impunity in those cases or to really confront the main perpetrators of the violence, the paramilitary groups.
Do you travel to Colombia on a regular basis?
I do.
Do you ever feel threatened because you've been so outspoken?
I tend to be very careful about my security, and I keep a low profile. So I try to avoid situations where I would feel threatened. But certainly there are regions of the country where you don't feel comfortable walking around.
What about you, Adam?
Pretty much the same thing. I go there every few months as well and try to maintain a low profile. I've never been in an uncomfortable situation, and you just use common sense.
Is Hugo Chavez popular among Colombians, or is he seen as the anti-Uribe?
I don't think that Chavez is all that popular among Colombians, although he's not necessarily unpopular either. I think the last poll I saw of Colombian, polling Colombians who have telephones, of course, but it had Chavez in, I believe, the 40% or to 50% range of his approval rating.
Well, that's pretty good for people who have telephones because so many people are too poor to have telephones.
Yeah, I think, well, that's true. These are the people who also give Uribe about a 70 to 75% approval rating. It may have gone down recently just because of some of Chavez's inflammatory rhetoric and his recent moves like starting to rule by decree and nationalizing industries. But people in the working class in Colombia have looked to Chavez more fondly. He's certainly admired by many in Colombia's left-wing opposition, which got about 25% or so of the vote in the last elections. So there is a sector that does find the Chavez model attractive, even if they don't find Mr. Chavez himself attractive.
Adam Isaacson is Director of Programs for the Center for International Policy's Colombia Program. And Maria McFarland is a researcher with Human Rights Watch. I want to thank you both so much for being on Underreported today.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.